Okay, we're holding on Kofi Tess on the base, six lines from the top. So we learned in the Mishnah, we talked about the case where we had a woman, a woman's husband and her Yuvama had gone over, not her Yuvama, her Tzara had gone overseas. We say that reports have come, the Edom have come, or whoever, that her husband is dead. We said she can't remarry, she can't marry outside the family, and she can't do Yibum until we find out what happened with her Tzara, whether her Tzara had a baby or not. Because however you look at it, if her Tzara had a baby, then fine, she can marry whoever she wants. There's no issue with Chalitza or Yibum. If she didn't have a baby or miscarried it or whatever, and now the husband's dead, so there's not going to be any more from him, then she needs to do Yibum. That was the Mishnah. So the question is, when you're saying loyti nasav loyti siyabim cholo ula olam, you're telling me forever she can't, she's stuck. Why don't she just do chalitza? And then however it is, if the chalitza was necessary, then it's necessary, and then she's mutter, and if not, then okay, you know, it doesn't hurt. On the theory, you're right, it doesn't mean forever. Well, asma shloisha chadashim, for herself, she as far as she herself is concerned, she'd have to wait 3 months. The usual 3 months we had earlier in the Masechta, that any time that a woman's husband has died or divorced her or whatever, she always has to wait 3 months before she remarries or does Yibum or Chalitza, just in case she is pregnant. It takes 3 months for it to be noticeable that she's pregnant. L'chaber tartisha, but she has to also be concerned. What about her tzara? May have been pregnant and had a baby. So she has to wait 9 months. And then after the 9 months, the chalitza to Manashach, then at that point she can do chalitza either way. If there's a baby, then the chalitza is unnecessary. And if not, if there wasn't a baby after 9 months, there's not going to be one anymore, because we assume that a pregnancy does, it's true, pregnancy theoretically could last longer than 9 months, but that's already miyota de miyota. As we learned yesterday, even a mayor is not worried about that kind of thing, let alone the chachamim. Therefore, at that point she can do chalitza, and she's safe.
First question is the Gemara of Elam, which is a different question.
No, that was the question. On the face of it, when the Mishnah is saying loyti nasiv loyti siyabim, it sounds like she's awesome. It sounds like she's stuck forever. So the answer is no. What the Iri is saying is no, she's not stuck forever. After 9 months, she will be able to do chalitza, and then she can get married. It's true. She can never do yibum unless she knows for sure that her yivama didn't have a child. But she can do chalitza after the 9 months, and then she's safe no matter what. Rav Chanina Amar, no. La'atma shloisha, it's true, as far as her herself, she would have to wait the same 3 months that everybody else does. But l'chaberta la'olam, actually no. When the Mishnah says that she can't marry, it means exactly what it sounds like. Until she finds out what happened with her tzara, she can't remarry. That's what's talking. So then the question becomes, v'tachlitz m'manafshach, so... Like the Idi said, why can't she, at that point, after 9 months, do chalitza, and she's in, and either way it works out? The reason is, abaya ba'oven, v'rachia b'rachanina ba'oven, amitavayu, true, technically she could, but gzera. Shema yehei vlad ben kayoma, we make a gzera, because what happens if it turned out that her tzara had a viable baby? So no yibum was allowed, and no chalitza was necessary. When you had her do chalitza, that made her pasul l'korna, because we know chalitza is pasul l'korna midrabanan. Now, it turns out the chalitza was unnecessary. Now you're going to require, in order for her to be able to marry a kohen, you're going to need to make an announcement. Everybody should know the chalitza that we made for this woman wasn't necessary, it turned out. And we don't want that. Question is, chalitza, so what? What's the problem? Makes it a cruz, makes it an announcement, and that's that. The answer is because you might have some people who were around at the time of the chalitza. We said before in an earlier parak when we were in Mitzvah's chalitza that the chalitza is supposed to be publicized. That's why even though technically la halacha you only need three, we have a base din of five, and we do various other things. So you can have somebody who was there at the chalitza, and then they're not there when the announcement is made. Later on, they see this woman marrying a kohen, v'amri kosharu chalutza l'kohen. People are going to think that a chalutza is allowed to marry a kohen. So because of that, we want to avoid the case. Now, we did have cases earlier in the Masechta, and even in the previous perek, where we say let her, you know, where we say chalutza v'lemes yabemes to be on the safe side, and we don't say things like that. Basically, because over there we're talking about b'dyevet dika cases. But here, l'chatchila, let her wait till she finds out what happens with her tzara. I think the Ritva says, the Vart is, so what are you going to make a poor woman be an aguna possibly forever just because of this problem that you don't want people to think a chalutza can marry a kohen? And the answer is, the gist of his answer is that the issue over here is not just other people, what other people may think. She herself may think, may figure, you know what, the chalitza I got is nothing, therefore I'm allowed to marry a kohen, because after all the whole chalitza was based on a suffix. And until we know whether the suffix, and until we're able to be pushed at the suffix, she shouldn't do that. So we want to make sure, l'chatchila, we don't want to allow her to get married in the first place, because she herself may end up thinking, or even in the future, so let's say she does chalitza and marries a non-kohen, and eventually he dies, she may think she can marry a kohen, because it turns out that, because maybe, you know, in the chalitza in the first place was a doubtful chalitza, and it turns out maybe it wasn't necessary. And we don't want to do that. In other words, she herself may get confused.
But she may find out about it.
No, so eventually, what if she never finds out, for example? What if we never have a way of knowing that the chalitza was possible? But she herself is going to think, you know what, I mean, she probably, my sort of probably had a child and I never found out about it. So she herself is going to end up being maple in the whole thing. So you said Tznan. Let's consider what the Mishnah say. Nitanli, we had the not our Mishnah, but the end of the previous parak. Nitanli ben mivdina seyam, that if a woman comes back and says, I had a child overseas, and then v'omra mes bni v'achakach b'ayli, and then she says, my child died, and then my husband died, which again, that means, in other words, she's returning herself to her original chazaka. We had the original chazaka that she has to do yibum. And now, when she says, I had a child, that's a pesha also, she's declaring that she's also to do yibum. And now a pesha hits her, because she declares that now she's chayiv in yibum, after all. And we say, nemenis, therefore we believe her. But mes bali v'achach mini, but if she says, my husband died and then my child died, ain't a nemenis, we don't believe her to do yibum. But v'choshish in the devarev, v'cholat v'sholim is yabemis. But we say, v'choshish what she says, we do have to be concerned, maybe after all she is telling the truth, therefore she has to do chalitza and not yibum.
After Mace Bali, she has no yibum.
Exactly, that's the point. That's the point, in other words. So that's the point. She's saying Mes Bali Vachkach Bni. She's saying my husband died, then my son died. So I am Pasur from yibum. So we can't allow her to be Yivam Lashuk. What if she's wrong? What if she's saying the other way around, because she hates her Yavam and doesn't want to have anything to do with him, and she's willing to go and be over on the Isulav of Yivam Lashuk. But we said we do have to be concerned, maybe after she is telling the truth. Therefore, she does chalitza. So, why aren't we worried about that Edim might come and say that indeed the situation was like she said? And then you're back to the issue where you're going to require, in order for her to be able to marry a kohen, you're going to have to make an announcement. We have the same problems as before. Why don't we say that in that Mishnah? So the Papa says, you're right. That previous Mishnah is talking about where she was already a divorcee from beforehand. Or otherwise, Pasala Korona, Chalala, Zaina, whatever. So she's already Pasala Korona anyway. There's no issue. You're never going to need a cruz la Korona. Because anyway, she's Pasala. So yes, then at that point, we might as well believe her that she's allowed to marry out. But yes, if she was Kasha la Korona, we wouldn't, because of the consideration of our Gemara over here. Here's another possibility. What if she says that the three of us, me and my son and my husband, were all hiding together in a cave? So nobody else was there with us. So now, there's no way that any Edim can ever come and contradict what she's saying. She's claiming that mes bni, therefore I'm potter from Yibum. You can say, okay, you know what, do chalitza just in case. There's no possibility that there's ever going to be that cruise the corner, because there's no possibility that any Edom are ever going to come and say, you know what, it was the other way around. She was actually Potter from Chalitza. But yes, in any other case, in a normal case where she says, Mes B'ni V'Achach Mes B'Ili, Yitzhak wouldn't believe her to do Chalitza either, for this reason, because, you know, because of the cruise the corner problem. And that's Taka the Halacha. So we're saying that what we said in the previous Mishnah, in the earlier Mishnah at the end of the previous parak, is if what she's saying now, if the situation that she's claiming to be in now matches the original chazaka that she had when she left, then we believe her. So when she left, she didn't have a child yet. Her husband didn't have a child yet. So she had a chazaka of that eventually she's going to be a shemeret zavam. if she's going to have a zika if her husband dies. She claims I had a child, which makes her osur for Yibum. But a pesha osur, a pesha yibum, because she says the child died first. But if she says her husband died first, that contradicts the chazaka. Before she had a chazaka that she's chayev in Yibum. Now she's coming to claim that she's potter from Yibum. You can't accept that, but you do have to be concerned about it. And therefore, you give her chalitza misafik. But what we're saying in our Gemara is you don't always give her chalitza misafik. In most, in the normal case, you actually would not, because of the same problem, kruz l'kohona. Only if she's already pasul l'kohona, or if she's saying that the whole thing, we were alone and nobody else was around, then we would say, since there's no kruz l'kohona issue, then we can give her chalitza misafik. The Meiri, by the way, says, you know what, if she's smart, what she'll do is, while she's a Shemeres Yavam, she'll go and be niskadish to another man and get a divorce from him. That way she's a Grusha. She's Pasul L'Kohona. Therefore, she can go ahead and get the Chalitza Misafik, and there won't be a Kruz L'Kohona issue. It doesn't have to be, in other words, the Meiri saying that she was a Grusha from beforehand in order for this to work. It can work if now, as a Shemeres Yavam, she becomes a Grusha. Well, not the Yavam. We're not talking about the Yavam. We're talking about some other person.
He won't be willing to give what it called
Chalitza. True. Okay.
Plus, he knows that he might be making a whole trade.
True. Okay. Mishnah continues. Shtei Yavamos. If you have two, so now we said before. Remember that. Among the women that we don't believe to give edus on each other that their husband died is her yavama, her sister-in-law. And we said the reason is because like she's looking forward to the future. She's looking ahead to the future. If her husband dies, then she ends up marrying my husband, and then we two are tzaris to each other. So therefore, even now, she hates her in advance. So shtei yavamas, zua meres mes baili, the zua meres mes baili. Each one says my husband died. So Rachel was married to Reuben, Leah was married to Shimon. They're not sisters. That the sisters would be then there wouldn't be an issue. There's never going to be a zika. Yeah, but so they're two unrelated. Well, let's not call them Rachel and Leah. They're not sisters. Let's call them Sarah and Rivka. Fine. So Sarah is married to Reuven. Rivka is married to Shimon. Each one is coming and saying, "My husband died." So zua surim apnei baila shel zuv, zua surim apnei baila shel zuv. Each one, yes, she would be mutter to marry if it weren't for the problem of yibum. Each one, we can believe Sarah to say that Reuven, her own husband, is dead, we said in the previous parak. But we can't believe her to say that her Yavam Shimon is dead. Because again, you have the same problem. She hates her Yavama and she wants to mess her up. So therefore we have to assume, looking at Sarah's situation, that Shimon, we have to figure, may still be alive, and she has a zika to him. Same thing with Rivka. She has a potential zika to Reuven. We don't know if Reuven's alive or dead or not. We accept that Reuven's dead insofar as we would say that Sarah herself is allowed to remarry, except for the issue of Yibum. Well, but we can't, so therefore both of them are stuck. How about Lazu Adim and Lazu Ein Adim? What if among these two women, one of them, it's not just her own word, she has actual Adim that her husband died. The Lazu Ein Adim and the other one does not. Then actually having Adim makes it worse for her. Eshi Yeshla Adim Asura, the one who has Adim that her husband died, is Asur to remarry. Why? Because she has Adim that her husband died. Very nice. But we didn't really need Adim for that. Even her own word, we would have believed her. We still don't have any proof that her brother-in-law, her Yavam, is dead. So she still has that potential Zika. Whereas the one who does not have Adim, fine. As far as her own husband is dead, we have her word, that's good enough. As far as that her Yavam is dead, we have the Adim. Good. She's free. Yeah. So there you have, I guess, an interesting chap. Where is it? Where could you have that bringing Adim to Beis Din makes things worse for you? Yeah. Another case. Lazu banim v'lazu ein banim. What if among these two women, one of them has children and the other one doesn't? Well, eshiyesh la banim muteres. Very simple. The one who has children is mutter to remarry because obviously we take her word that her husband's dead. No problem. Ishadaiko mitzvah. There's no issue of a yavam because there's no yavam to be done here. She and her husband had children. That's shein la banim asura. And the one who didn't have children remains also because of the same problem because she has that potential zika. Tosfos asked, I mean, so the Mishnah has to tell us that. I mean, we couldn't figure that out ourselves. And the answer is, in this kind of case, Tosfos says, you might have thought, it's very easy to confuse. If you say that one of these Yevamos is allowed to marry and the other one not, you might end up thinking that both of them are allowed to marry. Maybe we should make a Zera that the one, even with the one with children, shouldn't remarry, just in case that might lead us to accidentally be master of the other one. No, we're not worried about that. There's a big difference. Another case, Nisyabmu Umesu. What happens now? Let's add there were other brothers in the mix. So far, we were just talking about that each of these women had that each of these women's husbands had only one brother. It was just Reuben and Shimon. Now let's throw in some other brothers. You have Levi and Yehuda as well. So what are we saying? If there's Levi and Yehuda and they're here in town. So then neither of them is actually also to do Yibum. All we said is they can't be married Lashuk because there are their respective Yivamim. But if you have other brothers over there, if you have Levi and Yehuda there as well, good. Rachel can do Yibum with Levi. Sarah can do Yibum with Levi. Rivka can do Yibum with Yehuda, no problem. What happens now? So they did Yibum. Umesu ha-Yivamin, and now the Yivamin died. Now Levi and Yehuda died. Now we're back to the question, do they still have other brothers of their husbands? Is Shimon and Reuben respectively still alive? That we should have to be choshish that they still can't go marry Lashuk. So asuras linase, they're also to get married. Same problem, because you're still back to the problem. Sarah, we believe her to say that Reuben, her husband, died. That's why we allowed her to do Yibum with Levi. Similarly, Rivka, we believe that her husband Shimon was alive. That's why we allowed her to do Yibum with Yehuda. Now, when Levi and Yehuda are dead, we're back to the question. Sarah's Reuben was dead, but is Shimon dead? We can't believe her to say that. We can't believe her to say that Shimon is dead, and we can't believe Rivka hurt Sarah, not hurt Sarah, her Yevama, to say that Shimon is dead. So you're back to the same problem. Even though we believed that their husbands are dead, insofar as we allowed them to do Yibum, we're not believing that their respective Yevamim are allowed as far as allowing them to marry Lashuk. Rabbi Loza says, no. Once they become mutter to marry the Yevamim, once we accept that their husbands really are dead and we allow them to do Yibum, then yeah, automatically at that point we don't have to be concerned now all of a sudden maybe really they are alive after all. If we accepted well enough that they're dead and allowed their wives to do Yibum, then that's good enough now that all the known brothers are gone, then we can assume they really are dead and they can go marry the Shuk. Gemara we'll talk about then. So why did the Chachamim disagree with that? So in the case of the so we had the various cases of the Mishnah. One where they didn't have Edim, one where one of them has Edim, and then we have the case where one of them has children. Tana, so we learn in a Braisa, Lazu Edim Ubanim, Velazu Loy Edim Veloy Banim. If one of the women has Edim that her husband died as well as she has children. And the other one does not have Edim and does not have children, Shtei Mutaris, then both of them are mutter. The one who has Edim and children is allowed to remarry, very simple. The Edim, we don't really need the Edim that her husband's dead, we could accept her word. She has children, there's no issue of Yibum, so no problem. The other one doesn't have Edim or children, but we take her word that her husband is dead. We have the Edim that her Yavama brought, that her Yavama is dead, that Reuven is dead. Her Yavama brought Edim that her husband, which is her Yavam, died. So even though she has no children, she's also good. Because we know from her words her husband is dead. From her Yavama's Edim, we know that her Yavam is dead. So everything's good. Yeah. And the Mishnah continued with the case Nisyabmu Umesu Ayuvam and Asur and Linase. We said that if they did Yibum, again, so we had, there's Reuben, Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda over there. Reuben and Shimon went overseas. We're not sure what happened. We each of them is saying that my husband died, but we accept that for themselves. We don't accept it crosswise. So there's still the problem of Yibum. We said they go do Yibum with Levi and Yehuda, who are local. Later on, Levi and Yehuda die. What happens to them now? So we said that the Mishnah had said Asur and Linase, that they're also to remarry anybody else. Rabbi Loza, I'm a hoyo v'hotu l'yivamim v'hotu l'chadam, and Rabbi Loza says, once they're mutter to the Yivamim, they're mutter to everybody. Once we accept, that was a svara. In other words, once we accepted for sure that their husbands are dead and we allowed them to do Yibum, which after all, if their husbands are alive, then they're an Ashes Ish, and plus it's an Isser Karis and everything. So at that point, now that Levi and Yehuda are dead, we're not going to all of a sudden say, you know what, maybe after all, Shimon and Reuben are alive, respectively. So, on that, Boi Rava, my time is Rabbi Lazar. What really is Rabbi Lazar's reason that he says this? Is it mishum de kasavar tzara me'idu l'chavata? Is it that in general that he holds that yes, a tzara can give edus for her co-wife, for her tzara? In other words, according to Rashi, that what we're saying is, why did we say before that yevamos can't give edus for each other? Because eventually they may become tzaras. Rav Elazar may disagree with that whole concept. He may say, okay, so they're potential tzaras, or even they're actual tzaras. So what? They can be made for each other. And then in that case, then that would explain why, according to Rav Elazar, we say that when Sarah comes and says, my husband is dead, and Rivka comes and says, my husband is dead, we accept what Rivka is saying to help Sarah. And we accept what Sarah is saying to help Rivka. And therefore there's no issue. Is it that? Which Tosfos comes in over here and says, I mean, if that's what Rav Elazar is arguing, if he's arguing on the whole concept of a tzara or a yevama being made for each other, why is he waiting all of a sudden now? We've been talking about the four blot now, or about this concept of who isn't allowed to give edus for each other. So he says, no, the difference is that the previous cases, when we're talking about the normal case of a tzara or a yevama giving edus for the other one, what it means is, for example, that tzara is coming and trying to give edus that Shimon, Rivka's husband, is dead. Even Rav Elazar would agree you can't do that, because she may be doing it in order that then Rivka will go and remarry and get into trouble. But here, tzara is coming to say, my own husband is dead. Rivka is coming and saying, my own husband is dead. Yes, there comes out of it something for the Yavama as well. That's what, according to Tosfos, Rav Elazar is disagreeing on and saying, you know what? If you're accepting it that they themselves, we believe it as far as their husband themselves, we're not going to split it and say it's mutter for her and also for her. That doesn't make any sense. Yeah. So anyway, so is that... That would be one way of looking at it. Oy Dilma... or maybe the reason why Rav Elazar says his din in our Mishnah is only Mishum Dehi Lo Mekalkel Amasa. It's just because we're going to say she herself is not going to be Mekalkel herself. Look, forget about the fact that Sarah may be trying to get Rivka into trouble. The fact is, what are we seeing in the last case of the Mishnah? Sarah went on the assumption that her husband is dead and went, Isha Daiko Mintzvah, and she went and did Yibum with Levi. She's not going to do that for herself unless she knows for sure that her husband is dead. So maybe the Rebbe Lazar would say that's reason enough. If we see that Sarah herself is going to that extent and doing Yibum, then fine, we should believe that to the extent that it also means that for, as far as Rivka is concerned, that Reuben really is dead. And therefore, once we believe her to say that her husband Shimon is dead, then she's mutter to do Yibum with Levi or to marry out, etc. No, but here it's not that. Here what we're saying is, well, okay, so there is that, but no, here what we're saying is, yeah, that's true, but after all, though, she herself is coming and saying, Eders in Basedin, my husband is dead, and we do believe that.
Right.
What we say is we don't know that she's chayev in Yibum, we don't take her at her word that I'm chayev in Yibum, unless it already matches the chazaka from before. Here, it matches the chazaka of before. We knew from beforehand that Levi and Yehuda exist. We knew from before that if Reuben dies, she is going to be chayev in Yibum.
She had no children.
Yeah, because she had no children. So we're not depending on her to say that I'm chayev in Yibum. Okay, the question is, well, my nafkamina, fine, what's the practical difference between these two possible reasons for Rav Elazar's in? The difference is, le'in suvi l'tzara mikamedi da. Can we allow the tzara to get married before she does? So what do we say? We have Sarah coming and saying, my husband is dead, Reuben. We have Rivka coming and saying, my husband, Shimon, is dead. Let's not talk about two yevamim anymore. In the more general case, if we're saying that Rav Elazar is saying that a tzara can be made for the other tzara, then forget about the case of the two yevamim of our Mishnah, two yevamim of our Mishnah. Let's go back to the first Mishnah of the Perek, when you had the husband and the tzara went overseas and she stayed behind. So we're saying, if the tzara comes back and says, while we were overseas, while we were on that cruise, our mutual husband died, Mela then, if she herself, the tzara, goes and remarries first, then we might argue, you know, she's not going to be Makalko herself. She's not Isha Daiko Mintzava. She's not going to get remarried unless she knows for sure that her husband is dead. Therefore things are good. Therefore, we could argue that we believe it also as far as her tzara. But should we say maybe, would we allow, how about would we allow the other way around? Would we allow the one who stayed home to do Yibum before, or not to do Yibum, sorry, to remarry before the one who went overseas? What's the point? If you say that Rabbi Lazar holds that yes, a tzara can give edus for the other, as Tosfos said, as long as she's basically giving edus for herself, then it helps her tzara as well. Then afagavdala intiv, mamtzivin lala tzara. So fine, even if she hasn't gotten married yet, we don't have to worry that she did it out of spite. We can go ahead and let the tzara, the one who stayed home, get married first, and we're not worried that maybe she's saying false edus in order to mess things up for her.
Just you, the one that's actually out of town, married first, is both.
No, that's the thing. That's the thing. If you say the reason why we believe that tzara is because she herself is not going to want to mess things up for herself, that's just it. So only if the tzara herself gets married first. Then we can marry off the other one. But if Leah, the one who went on the cruise, says, you know what? Our husband is dead, but you know what? I'm going to wait around a while before I get married. Then already, maybe you got to be suspicious that she's trying to mess things up for Rachel. So that would be the nafkamina. That would be the nafkamina between these two possible reasons of Rebbe Lazar. What's the deal? Tashma, Rebbe Lazar Omer, we said in our Mishnah, Rebbe Lazar Omer, hutru liyavamin, hutru lachaladim. We said once they became mutter to the Yavamin, in other words, once we said, again, in the case of the four brothers, Reuben, Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda, we said once we allowed each of them to do Yibum with respectively Levi and Yehuda, then at that point, if Levi and Yehuda died, they can marry anybody, because we assume that Reuben and Shimon really are really and truly dead. Now, Iyamet Mishlema, Dehilema, Kalkala, Napsha, if you're going to say the reason why Rabbi Lazar is saying you believe them like that and you allow them to remarry is because each one of them is not going to want to ruin things for herself, well, then that's exactly it. We're saying that she herself remarried, therefore, and only therefore do we allow her tzara, her potential tzara, actually, her yavama, to remarry. But if you're saying that in general Rabbi Lazar does not hold to this whole concept of tzaras being of tzaras having it in for each other and trying to ruin things for each other, well then what does the mission need to say? That they already did yibum. Then the same thing should be true even if she didn't marry yet. Even if Rachel had not actually done yibum yet with Levi. Still, we should say that it means that not Rachel, Sarah, did Yibum with Levi, which is still say that already now at this point, Rivka is able to go and do Yibum with Yehuda. Because if Rabbi Lazar believes that, the Tzareis or the Yivamos are not Chashud to lie and then try to ruin things for each other, so what does it matter the order? The fact that the Mishnah says that he says Hurva Hutru, the Yivamin, only because they were Mutter, implying that they already married the Yivamin, then they're Hutru L'Choladim, implies that it actually has to be Taka in that order. No, so it's not a question. It's just it seems to show that the reason why Rabbi Lazar says his statement in the Mishnah, he does usually say that tzaris can't give edus for each other. But in this case, he said, given that she herself is not going to do things in a way that are going to ruin things for herself, then we accept it on behalf of her yavama as well. But if she herself hadn't gotten married yet, if she herself had said, you know what, I'll wait, then we would be chashish.
But the Mishnah said that they're married to the yavama.
Yeah.
Didn't say
right, but the expression "hayover hutru l'yivam and hutru l'chaladam" is mashma that they already yeah. Doesn't say, but
no.
The Astana. I mean, it depends. You could say Shimon HaTzadik. You say Shimon HaTzadik, but it really depends when you consider the time of the Tanoim to begin. Do you consider it all the way back from after the Anshik Knesset Gdolah, or do you consider it? Do you consider first the Zugis and then the Tanoim?
The first time
is
what is the Zugis.
Yeah.
There's no way in the Shimon HaTzadik.
All right. Okay. So obviously then that implies that Rabbi Lazar must be saying, why am I allowing it in this case? Only because each of these Yivamas is not going to mess things up for herself. So that's the reason we believe her, but not because we say that in general a tzara can be made for a tzara and we're not worried about it. The answer is not necessarily, because you could explain the Mishnah, l'divrayim karmalahu, because you could say that Rabbi Lazar is telling the Chachamim according to your own shita. He would say like this, Lididi, Sarami, Dilachavita, Bafgadla, Insid, Mansavinim. According to me, Bechlal, I don't hold the whole concept that Saras have it in for each other. I would hold that they can give Ados for each other, no problem. So even if she hasn't remarried yet, we'll allow the other one to remarry. We're not worried that there's a trick over here. Elo Liditu, but according to you, that you say in general, Saras are not believed, Oduli Miyas, the Hechav, Insid, Mansavinim. Shouldn't you at least agree that if Sara herself went to the, even as so far as getting remarried, that already you should accept it on behalf of Rivka, because she's not going to ruin things for herself. But the Rabbanan disagree. The Rabbanan, what do they answer? Yes, she might be going so far as to say, yes, I'll be going and taking my chances and going and remarrying, even though there's a possibility that my husband really is alive and I'm going to end up in a bad way, just so that she will do the same thing and wind up in trouble. Yeah, that's Thomas Nafshi and Plishtim. That's how far it can go, yeah. Tashma, Ha'isha Shahol Chahiyu Vailal Mdinasayam. How about the mission from the previous parak, that if a woman went with her husband overseas, Uvavar Amma Mes Bailey, and she came back and said, my husband died, we said, Tinasa Venitit Psubasa, she can remarry, she can collect her Psuba, Vitsarasa Asura, and we said that her Tsara is Asur, because again, we can't accept her Eidos to be Master her Tsara. But Rabbi Loza Omer, no, but Rabbi Loza says that once she's mutter, then her tzara is also mutter. Which the implication is, we're saying once she became mutter, without necessarily getting married, once we gave her the heter. So we see then that it would be that he disagrees with the whole concept that tzaras can't be made for each other. He would hold that even if the one who gave eders didn't yet get married, the other one is allowed to. The answer is no. No, you could say when Rabbi Loza says Hoga Hutra, he means not only she received the heter, but she actually got married. Which again, that would be the second idea that we say over here that Rabbi Loza doesn't hold the Thomas Nafshi and Plishtim thing. He says, yes, maybe I'll believe that they hate each other. I don't believe that she's going to go so far as Thomas Nafshi and Plishtim. Yeah. Question is, okay, let's add in another detail. How about we could say that Rabbi Lazar figures when the one woman goes and remarries, the one who is overseas, maybe it's Bechlal not because she knows for sure her husband is dead. She could be playing a trick over here. Dilma Begita, so she could be coming carrying a get. In other words, their husband had divorced her while they were overseas. But she pretends that not. She pretends that he died. But then she claims that he died in order to mess things up for her tzara. So why? Just because? So even if she went so far as to get remarried, why would Rabbi Loza say automatically that means fine? You can believe her that he's dead. Maybe she's playing a trick. She really? Why is she getting remarried? Because on the basis of a get. But she's pretending. What get? He died. Yeah. The answer is, Idi Insiv Yisrael Hachinami. You're right. If she had married a Yisrael, then you're right. There could be such a possibility. Hachab Mayaskin Idi Insiv LaKayin. But the case we're talking about over here is she married a Kayin. So even if if she tried to do it on the basis of a get, she knows that eventually if it's found out, if their husband comes back and says, you know what, I'm not dead, I divorced you, then Beis Din is anyway going to force her to divorce her husband, the Kayin. She's not going to want that. So therefore, Rabbi Loza holds that in that case, so if she married a Kohen, Rabbi Loza would say, you know what, then there's no possibility of trickery over here.
Most people
are Kohen. Okay, so 1 out of 10, fine. So if she marries, if she married a Kohen, no, then we see that obviously she knows she's not a Grusha.
The
Rabbi
Loza's case is very real.
Okay. I mean, the Gemara is kind of leaving it unresolved anyway. We don't really know for sure what Rabbi Loza's reasoning is at the end of the sugya. The fact is, I mean, the halacha is like the chacham anyway, so it's kind of a moot point. But yeah, that's the thing. If she came back, so that's the thing. If she married a kohen, then it means that she knows for sure that her husband is dead, not that she was divorced. What are we worried about? We're worried about that Leia comes back from the cruise, saying, you know what, our husband died. She goes and remarries. Meanwhile, she figures, you know what, I'll only be saying that in order to play a trick on Rachel. Meanwhile, Rachel will get married and get into all kinds of trouble. Right. But if she, the point is, if Leah marries a Kohen, We know for sure she didn't do it on the she didn't come back carrying a get. She's not marrying on the basis of a get. It has to be that she knows her husband's dead. Once she knows her husband's dead, Rabbi Elazar would say that in that case we're not worried. Thomas Nafshi and Plishtim business. We assume that he really is truly dead, and therefore we'll allow Rachel. Where's the Chum hold Thomas Nafshi and Plishtim, and even so, yeah. Mishnah says now that having done the end of the last parak and the first part of this one about when we believe who we believe and who we don't believe to give edus that somebody is dead. Now we got to get to what do you actually have to see in order to know that somebody is dead? Mishnah says this is by the way this Mishnah and these next two blocks of Gemara. Pretty much any tshuva in all the Shilas Tshuvas literature that deals with the halachas of agunas is going to be based on these next two blocks. Mishnah says, "Ein me'edin ela al parts of ponim machoitim." You can't give edus unless you saw the features of the face, basically meaning the cheeks, chin, whatever, together with the nose. Even if you have simonim on his body or on his clothes, you can't rely on those. Now, there's a big machloikas on what this part of the Mishnah means. There's a big machloikas between Rabbi Tam in Tosfos and more extensively in a Truva of his in Sefer HaYashar versus most of the other Rishonim. Most of the other Rishonim take what we're saying here at face value. Even if you have a whole body in front of you, you recognize the body, you recognize this particular person, you know, he had a limp, he had six fingers, he had this, that, the other, you know, you need to be able to see the actual face in order to testify that he's dead. Rabbi Natam in Tosfos and in Sefer HaYashar says no. The Mishnah is talking about if the person was decapitated, if their head was chopped off. So all you have is a head. Then, in order to testify that he's dead, you need parts of ponim machotim. You need enough of the face. You need to be able to recognize the face. But if you have a whole body, if you have a whole body and you recognize, for example, you know, I know this guy. You know, he had stitches on a certain part of his leg. You know, in just such and such a position or whatever. We'll talk on other bays the different kinds of simonim. Then yes, that would be good enough. No. El al parts of ponim achotim. If all you have is a head, you can't be made, for example, just because, let's say, I recognize the shape of the guy's beard, or the color of the shape of his eyes or whatever. Parts of means the face. So basically, what it means, parts of ponim achotim basically means the lower half of the face. And the Gemara is going to point out you need the forehead also. There's a mimer in the Kutta Torah in Shir HaShirim where the Alter Rebbe talks about the idea that basically from the eyes downward is the part of the face that has more to do with the specific spheres. That's why you have two eyes, two nostrils, etc. You know, you have specific evarim. Whereas above that, the Mesach is basically the forehead is basically like it's a makif. And that's why our Mishnah doesn't mention it. The Gemara fills it in that you need the makif as well as you need the productive. So even though you have simonim on his body or on his clothes, you can't rely on that. According to all the other Mephoshim, it means even if you have a complete body. According to Rabbi Tam, it would mean if you have only the body without the head, then you can't rely on simonim. Then you can't rely just on simonim on the body yet. So we'll talk about on Amud Beis. There's different kinds of simonim. There's something called simonim muvhakim. No. So Talmud Chacham is something else.
Had a finger missing, or that's simonim
muvhak. When did we talk about a Talmud Chacham? We talked the other day about a Talmud Chacham. No. Right. So we said over there that they found simonim on the body. Right. We talked briefly. We didn't really get into what are simonim muvhakim, what are not. The Mephoroshim on Shulchan Aruch say something like, when we get to Simon Muvak, when we get to the continuation of Sugya, we'll see in more detail, but they explain that a Simon Muvak is something that maybe you'd find, like, that you wouldn't even find on like one out of 1,000 people, as opposed to a Simon Mamusa, a Simon Emtsoi, that's a Masetic rite in one of the Shuvahs, maybe you'd find it in one out of 100 people, and then you have a Simon that's completely not Muvak, like, for example, the guy was tall, the guy was short, you know, I mean, you have many tall, you have, you know, 45% of people are tall, and, you know.
That's why
so that's what I'm saying. There's different kinds of simonim. I mean, I think I've heard, you know, I mean, nowadays, for example, you know, you have cases of agonists where they identify the person based on dental records after September 11th, for example, you know, or plane crashes or whatever, Rahman al-Islam, you know, sometimes they use dental records. Those would be considered b'chashdus asim and muvah, because every person has a unique pattern of their teeth and their fillings and whatnot. I think so, yeah.
I just saw they were about, okay, I think Gabi, very, my wife, they have a record.
Mm-hmm.
Only once it's vaccinated.
Wow. Continues the Mishnah. Ein me'edin el achateitzi napshi. You can't give edus that the guy is dead until his neshama actually leaves his body. V'afilu ra'u meguyad. Even if they saw that he was all cut up. Rashi says, like he's got wounds, he's got sword wounds all over his body. He's like almost cut in pieces. But he's still alive. Yeah. But Saluv, or even if they see him hanging. Now, what do we mean by hanging? There's different posts can talk about. Are we talking about hanging, like the kind of hanging that we read about in books, with a rope? Or are we talking about something more like what the Romans did, like crucifying somebody, putting him up, you know, nailing him up on a cross? The Bach, for example, right, so if a person was hanged by a rope, then, yeah, there's no question he's dead. His neck snapped. That's it. He's dead, you know. But if he's crucified, that person can last like that a couple of days. And meanwhile, they could cut him down.
Hanging, like what they did supposedly to
Yoshka and many other people in history. That they nail his arm and his legs to a cross. Yeah. Or I've seen also different people explaining that throughout Tanakh, whenever it talks about hanging somebody, the Talisa Isalait or by Haman, by Yisro Haman, etc. That means where a punishment that they had in those days called impaling, where basically they take a sharp stick and stick it, where the sun doesn't shine, and then the guy just sits up there out in the open and eventually dies from the pain and whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, but they don't do the thing with the snap. They hang him slow. They just move the thing from under him slowly. There's two types of hanging where you're up and staying and you fall,
right,
and it snaps the neck. That's mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then there's a hanging where you just literally hang. You just take away the pain.
Okay.
It's up to 6 minutes.
Anyway, so even if you see him in one of these situations, you see a wild animal is chewing away at him, you still, somebody might have saved him, as we were going to talk about. You can't give edus on the person unless you find the body within 3 days. Because after 3 days, already it swells up, it starts decaying or whatever, you don't recognize it anymore. Rabbi Huda ben Bava, I'm a leikal adam, leikal makom, leikal sharis shabbin. You can't say generally 3 days. It depends. People are different. Fat people spoil faster than cold people, than skinny people. Different places in the Arctic, the body will last longer than in the middle of Africa. Leikal sharis, the day or night. So you have to evaluate it based on that. Well, it's tanan rabbanan. When we say that you need parts of panim makotim. If you have padachas, if you see the person's forehead, the light parts upon him, but you don't see his actual facial features, the lower part of his face, or parts upon him, like padachas, ein me'edin, you can't give edus, ad shiyushneim machotim, unless you have the forehead and the nose and the cheeks and then that area, you need all of that. Amar Abaye v'tamer of Kahana Maikra, where the pasuk that expresses that idea, the pasuk says hakoras pneim on sabam. The recognition of their face testifies against them. The Navi is talking about like the people, the Yidden in the time of the first Beis Hamikdash who are doing Averis, like you look on their face and you see their Averis. But we see the expression, Akaras Pneim, implies that you need a hecker upon him. You need to be able to thoroughly recognize the face. So therefore we see that you need both the forehead and the other parts of the face. And the Gemara gives an example of that. Abba Bamauta du Abba Bamanyumi. He had two names. Either because of the Gemara is going to say he was poor and he was running away from his creditors, so maybe he went by more than one name. Or maybe Mauta and Manyumi were the names of his respective parents, his mother and his father. Anyway, so he owed the members of the Resh Kalusa, of the Resh Kalusa's household money. And the Resh Kalusa's household, we find throughout Shas, were oftentimes very tough crowd. So he has to be able to get away safely. Icy Kira, he took wax, Dovak Bibliyasa, and he stuck the wax onto a piece of cloth, Dovak Bapurse, and he stuck that onto his forehead. Chol of Kamayu, Vilev Ashkarua. Then he walked in front of them. He was able to walk by near where they are, and they didn't recognize him. So we see from that that you need the forehead in order to be able to fully recognize a person. The Yerushalmi has a somewhat similar story, not involving the forehead, though, but involving the nose. We see near the Mishnah mentioned that you need imachotim. The Yerushalmi tells that at one time the people of Sukkoti were being hunted down by the and then killed by the Romans. So they put on fake noses, basically. They put bandages over their noses so nobody would recognize them. And for a while it worked, until people mastered on them. So those little novelty fake glasses and noses that they sell. Apparently it works. Then the Mishnah said, "Afal pi sheyesh simanim chola," that even if you have simanim on his body or on his clothes. Oh, and by the way, I should mention, as far as this business about the face, there's actually, so now we're going to be talking about simanim. There's two different ways that you can recognize a person. Same thing, and you have the same concept, which the Gemara is going to compare it with the dinim of Ashava Saveda, the Gemara in Eil Metzias. It has a somewhat similar sugya to this. There's two ways. You know, you can have a particular simon you have on something. You know, I had, you know, my initials are on it, or, you know, there's a scratch on it in a particular place or whatever. Where then you have, you know, the different kinds of simonim that we just talked about. You know, you have simonim gruim, like, you know, this is not even a simon at all. It's, you know, the color of it. You know, there are lots of green bags and blue bags and yellow bags out there. It's not a simon at all, really. And you have medium simonim, and then you have a simon muhak, like, you know, not one in a thousand bags out there is going to have this particular simon. So all that is simonim. Then you have
people who
had
numbers on
their arms. Right, so there's that. That would be an example of a simon. Yeah. Then you have, though, there's something else called tvias ayin. In Eil Metzias, it talks about the idea, for example, that Talmid Chacham can claim their lost object based on tvias ayin. Tvias ayin is, I can't really give any specific simon on it, but I recognize this thing overall. Like, for example, when you know somebody who you know their face. Is it that you could mention, for example, yeah, I know them because, you know, they have a wart over here and they have, you know, they you know. No, you recognize their face in general. So when we were just talking about over here what part of the face you need to be made, we're talking about mitzvah tevias ayin. If you have a simon, then yeah, you don't need the whole face. As long as they have a simon muvak, then that's good enough. So the Mishnah anyway, so the Mishnah had said that even if you have simonim on his body or on his clothes, question is, remember to simonim lav daraisa. So you're telling me that relying on simonim is not valid daraisa, and therefore you can't be matir a woman to be married on that basis? Or a mini, I have a contradiction. You have a case where a person is a shliach to bring a get, a shliach halacha. He loses the get on the way. Later on, it's found, matzei kosher b'kis of arniki of a tabas, if you find it tied to his money bag, or kis is a money bag, arnaki is a purse, another kind of money bag, or tabas, or on his ring, oishin nimtza ben kelev, or he finds it among his clothes, or among his household objects, afilu l'zman meruba, even if it was a long time later, kosher, then the get is kosher. So we see that we're relying on simonim, because we're assuming, what does it mean that it was found tied to his tabas, for example? How is he claiming the tabas and the get along with it? The pashtus is giving a simon. And so we see there, the simon is kosher midaraisa. We allow that this is the actual get that he lost, not that maybe this is another get that happened to be written for people that have the same name, and therefore would be possible. No, we accept it. So you see, simonim do work, daraisa. I'm going to buy it like kasha, harab alazim, and ma'avai, harabonim. You're right, it's actually machlokas tanoim. The Tanya, as we learn in the Braisa, ein me'idin ala shuma, you cannot give edus that a person is dead based on a wart. A shuma is either a wart or a mole. Whatever it is, some kind of skin, some kind of thing on the skin, which is reasonably unique among people. I mean, many people have warts and moles, but not, you know, each one has different kinds. But you can't give edus on that. Rabbi Elazar ben Mavai, I'm an edin. Rabbi Elazar ben Mavai said you can. If you find a body and you recognize, I know this person, he had a wart in such and such a place, and that's good. Now, my law, b'ha kamiflagi, l'chora, isn't that the machlokes? The mar sava simonim d'araisa, or mar sava simonim d'rabbanon. The pashtos, Rabbi Elazar ben Mavai holds that simonim d'araisa, therefore it's good enough. The rabbanon holds it's only d'rabbanon, and therefore it's not good enough. Maybe it's good enough to return a lost object, not a get maybe, but a regular lost object, but not to be made that a person is dead, and not to return a lost get. The answer is no, Amar Rava, no, not necessarily. D'kula alma simonim d'araisa, you could say everybody agrees that simonim are good even d'araisa, which the Gemara and the Mishnah there in Bava Metzia, in Eil Metzias, learns it from a pasuk. So what is it? Halacha b'shuma matzuri v'ben gilui k'mitzugi. The machlokas here between the Chachamim and Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Avai would be, is the same kind of shuma, is the same kind of wart likely to be found on ben gilui? Somebody who was born under, if the same, somebody who was born b'perek echad of mazal, Achad Rashi says, at the same time and in the same mazal, or in the same period of time and in the same mazal. So a bar mazal, you have, for example, the famous thing that a bar mazal can take away 1/60th of a person's sickness when he's mevakel chola. There's a certain,
only that,
basically only a bar mazal, yeah. No, the Gemara in Nedarim, the Gemara in Nedarim talks about it and says that specifically it's a bar mazal that does that. A bar mazal is somebody who's born under the same mazal as somebody else.
So,
is that the
mazal
of the hour?
Is the mazal of the days? I don't know. Or maybe both. Maybe all. No. Yeah.
How do you find someone with the same mazal anyway?
I don't know. You have to ask people for their birthdays.
No one has. No. So someone has the exact same birthday?
Not necessarily the exact same birthday. Let's say, for example, take for example. Let's say we are talking about the mazalos of the hours and the days. The Pashtus, then, if somebody is born exactly a week later than you, then they have the same mazel of the day of the week and the same mazel of the hours, because those also rotate on a weekly basis.
Oh, so the same day and hour.
Maybe that's enough. Whatever. Anyway, the question is over here, given that there is that connection between these people, maybe they tend to have the same kind of warts. So therefore, you found this body, you think it's Reuben, maybe really it's Shimon. So, Mar Sof Shuma Matsuri Ben Gila, the Tanakama hold, the Chachamim hold that a Shuma is likely, the same kind of Shuma is likely to be found on Ben Gila. So you can't give Aedus on that, because who says it's the same guy? Well, Mar Sof Shuma Matsuri Ben Gila, whereas Elazar ben Avai would hold that no, it's not so likely to be found on Ben Gila. Warts or moles or whatever are likely to be unique from one person to another. The Ikadamri, or another possibility, the machloikus could be if it's a kind of wart that tends to change its shape or its size or its color or whatever after the person dies. So the Tanakama holds that, yes, maybe you recognize the wart while the guy was alive, but now after death it tends to change in color or whatever. So now you're looking, you're thinking it's the same wart, and it's not. When the guy was alive, when this person whose body you just found was alive, the wart tacka looked different. Now that he died, it looks like Shimon's wart after he's dead looks like Reuben's wart when he was alive. Where's Rabbi Elazar ben Avai holds that? No, it doesn't. The Ikadamri, others say, Amar Rava to kulam siman midrabanan. Another way you could look at it is everybody agrees simanim are only good midrabanan. So therefore, that explains why you can't be made on simonim over here by Eidus Isha. We're back to we have the question why you can by Gittin, but that we'll get to now. We'll get to that in a minute. The halacha b'shuma simon muva can be for these. The machloikus is this wart considered a simon muva? Like we said before, simon muva, because you know, would be something that like it would be a rarity to find it among anybody else. So the Tanakama, Rabbi Elazar ben Avai would hold it is a Simon Mubak, seems to be made on that. Whereas the Tanakama would hold that not. So no contradiction yet. When our Mishnah says you can't be made on Simonim, and where the one in the case of the get, you can be made on Simonim, then it would be the difference of whether we're talking about Simon Mubak or not.
Even if it's on the money.
Well, wait. We're going to get to in a second why with things of money. The question is, Olahach lishna d'amar rabbanan simanim d'araisa. Going back to the first explanation that Rava had said that simanim are d'araisa. Well then, how could that be? So okay, that explains how you can return the get based on simanim on the ring or the money bag or whatever. But how come in our Mishnah hakatani afbishias simanim go for the Caleb? Our Mishnah had said you can't. Can't be made based on simonim on his body or on his clothes. The answer is the kind of simonim we're talking about in the Mishnah, according to that understanding, would be simonim gruim. There would be things that are not really a simon at all. Gufay de oruch v'gutz. For example, the simon as far as the body would be that it's short or tall. There's lots of short people, lots of tall people. Caleb de chashin and l'sheila. And as far as his clothing, yes, maybe it is not a unique simon, but at least it's not a simon garua, it's a medium simon. But with clothes, you always have a possibility that he lent his clothes to somebody else. Those of us who grew up with the five novelettes are familiar with the one of Out of the Depths, where one of Marcus Lehmann's stories, or short stories over there, where a guy in order to escape from a bad situation at home, goes and exchanges clothes with somebody else, and then later on they find the body and they think it's him. Okay, the question is the Ichashin and Lashayla. If you're worried that people may lend their clothes or their other personal effects to each other, then Chamor b'Simanei Ukov Hechamadrinan. How is it? We learn there in Bava Metzia, we learn from an extra word in the pasuk over there, that you can return a donkey to somebody not only if he gives simanim on the animal itself, but even if he gives simanim on the saddle of it. Chamor b'Simanei Ukov. So why? Yeah. The answer is, Loi Shaili Inshi Ukva. People don't lend saddles to each other. The Misakiv Lechamra, because it chafes the animal's back. Every animal has to have the saddle made personalized for it. And after a while, it gets to fit the animal very well. So you lend it to somebody else, then nobody else is going to want to borrow it because it's not going to fit their donkey exactly and it's going to chafe the back. Or Ben Hanan says the other way around. The other guy may borrow it, but then it'll get stretched out of shape. You'll put it back on your donkey and it'll chafe his back. So nobody does that. Okay, how about going back to the case of the get? Must the kosher of the kiss of Arniki of Tabas Hechemadrinan? Going back to the get then, if you're saying that simonim are only, if you're saying that simonim, that we're not talking about simonim muhakim, that we're talking about maybe average simonim, then how are you able to return the get based on the guy gives a simon on his ring? The answer is Tabas, because nobody lends out their ring or their money bag either. Tabas chayish tzayufi. Nobody lends out their ring because rings in those days had a stamp on them. They were signet rings, so nobody lends them out because you could forge instructions with it. You know, it would be the equivalent of nowadays. If you don't give out your signature to people because you don't want them to forge your signature. You know, maybe social security number. Yeah, whatever. And as far as a money bag or a purse, people don't lend them out because people are menachish. People are superstitious. People feel that if you lend your money bag, if you give your money bag to somebody else, he's taking your mazel along with it. So yes, if you find the money bag and he's able to give even an average simon on it, not maybe a simon muvak, not necessarily, let's say that there's a rip dafka by this letter of the get, which would be a simon muvak. But let's say he gives an average simon. The bag has a rip in such and such a place. Okay, but some other bags might also. But that's good enough because we're not going to assume that he lent the bag to anybody else anyway. Or another possibility, Caleb b'chivri v'sumki. And again, when we're talking in our Mishnah about the simonim on his clothes, again, we mean simonim gruim. We were assuming that we mean good simonim. Let's say, for example, that his monogram is on the clothes, and we say, okay, but there's a possibility he lent him to somebody else. Now we're saying, though, maybe when the Mishnah says you can't use simonim of the kalim, also means simonim gruim. You say, for example, he was wearing red pants. Okay, but there's a lot of red pants out there. So and that would be whereas if you have even average simonim, maybe that would be good enough. There's an interesting thing that's brought in Sifrei Halacha, a chiddush from one of the rabbanim of Prague. In many Sfarim it says it under the name of Maharal Miprag, but that's actually wrong. It's actually between Marhal, Merenu Harab Helman. He came up with an idea that, that if you have... So he came up with an interesting chiddush based on the mahalach of the Gemara over here that if you have average simonim on the guy's body and good simonim on the clothes, then that's good enough no matter what. Because then you have both. However you look at it, however you look at the mahalach of the Sovia, it should be good enough. Okay.